Hey everyone, welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. First things first, if you guys haven't checked it out, please check out the video that I put together for Brother Charles Harper's new book, Freemasonry in Black and White. I urge you all to pick it up. Even the House of the Temple bought a copy to keep in their library, so it's a really good book. Anyway, check out the link to the book, which is on our website, www.wcypodcast.com. And I believe Brother Charles Harper will even be doing an autographed copy, if you like. And I'm not sure on where to go for the link for that, but I'll find out for you guys and I'll post it in a Facebook post soon. So, toward the end of the month, I'll be down in Southern Illinois meeting up with Brother James E. Fry, Todd Creason, and perhaps a few others from the Midnight Freemasons, and also Charles Harper, at a lecture by Chris Hodapp, the author of Freemasonry for Dummies. It's going to be a lecture on symbology, so it looks to be pretty interesting. There may be a delay in getting the episode out on time. It could be a day late, and that's just fair warning. Right after the lecture, which is on Sunday night, usually when the podcast comes out, I'll be driving 7 hours or more up to Flint, Michigan to hopefully video Charles Harper's lecture at another lodge there, and then driving 5 hours back home. It's going to be a filled weekend for sure. I'll be taking with me, at least to the first lecture, a friend of mine who is not a Mason. And keep in mind, there are events which do allow perspectives. These provide great opportunities to introduce good friends who might make great Masons. Now, the first piece I have for you all this week is going to be, again, from the Illinois Lodge of Research. So we'll go ahead and get into that right now. And again, I'll be reading from paper and not digitally, so if you hear a little bit of rustling, I do apologize. This piece is called The Men Who Build Forever, and it's from Volume 18 of the Illinois Lodge of Research, page number 7. It's by Dr. Stephen R. Greenberg. By the dawn of the 20th century, America had satisfied her territorial desires. Puerto Rico, Hawaii, Western Samoa, and Guam all had been brought into the protecting arms of our country. America, notwithstanding, continued its presence on the horizon of overseas expansion. We were largely ignoring the shifts in the delicate balance of power on the European continent in favor of Latin America and Asia. Such a diplomatic course brought our nation into broader communication with the powerful forces of the world of imperialism. President and Brother Theodore Roosevelt, an outspoken advocate of a strong foreign policy, brandished his big stick with a great aplomb to achieve compelling respect for the rights and interests of our citizens. Not lost on this great leader were the many thousands of miles and the great time needed to travel and ship commerce from New York to San Francisco. If there might be a way to significantly improve these circumstances, Roosevelt vowed to find it. And find it he did. American engineers discovered a plan of earlier years showing how the route might be shortened by establishing a waterway through the narrow Isthmus of Panama. Simple as this might appear, there were major obstacles that stood ready to bring these propositions to an early end. Conditions of extreme heat and disease, labor problems, and political opposition at home and abroad were at once in place. Early on, the president was confronted with major obstruction to his designs by the nation of Colombia, which at this juncture owned Panama. With both strength and wisdom, acted first and then sought for arguments of morality and righteousness to justify his policy. The Hay-Pauncefote Treaty, concluded with Great Britain in 1901, provided for the initial construction of a canal in the region by the United States. Negotiations were initiated with Colombia for the yielding of territory across the Isthmus of Panama, which was, at that time, a province of Colombia. In March of 1903, a pact was concluded, ceding a 6-mile-wide strip of land recognized as the Canal Zone to the United States for the payment of $10 million and annuity of $250,000. This treaty, however, was negated by the Colombian Senate. As only he could, Theodore Roosevelt exploded, calling the Colombians contemptible little creatures, jackrabbits, and homicidal corruptionists. It was no more possible to reach an agreement with them, he declared, than to nail currant jelly to a wall. At the beginning of November of 1903, a revolution broke out in Panama. An American warship happened at this opportune moment to be in the Atlantic port of Colon, the basis of an old treaty granting the United States the right to control communications across the isthmus. An American naval commander denied transit to the Colombian troops seeking to cross Panama in order to quell the revolt. The patriotic forces of this tiny country were soon able to establish their independence. The new Republic of Panama was quickly recognized by Washington. On November 18, 1903, a treaty was signed granting to America the same terms which previously had been refused by Colombia. Theodore Roosevelt now had his big ditch. Many leaders in Congress said the Panama Canal could not be built. Many Americans shared this view, but there were two men, Theodore Roosevelt and George Washington Goethals, a lieutenant colonel in the Army Corps of Engineers, who declared that it would be built. Dr. Carl Winters had provided a rare insight into the strength of character resident in those two canal builders. This illustrious brother related that President Roosevelt waited until the congressman had recessed. Then he summoned Lieutenant Colonel Goethals to his office and said, quote, "I want you to go down to Central America and dig a ditch across the isthmus. I want you to dig tunnels through 9 mountains, make 9 locks that will lift the greatest ships. I want you to handle hundreds of thousands of men, spend millions of dollars, and I want you to control the tides of the sea. I want you to build a canal that will cut 8,000 miles of the water route from New York City to Los Angeles and make it snappy." Goethals started immediately in his mission. At a newspaper interview, he was asked, "What are you going to do when you get down there? You know that several companies have already failed, millions of dollars have been lost, and thousands of men have already died. Other engineers consider it impossible. What are you going to do?" Looking directly into the eyes of the reporter, the colonel exploded. "I'm going to build a canal." "Suppose you are faced with a strike," he was asked. "What will you do?" He again replied, "I'm going to build a canal." When he was then asked, "Suppose you have an avalanche and the mountains fall, or there is an epidemic and the men die, what will you do then?" He said to them, "I'm going to build a canal. My concern is with the people. If I can handle the people, the canal will build itself." 27 different nationalities came together and molded into a magnificent working team. They were told that no river existed that could not be crossed, that no mountain was present that could not be bored through. These men were now specialists in the wholly impossible. When later on the first ship sailed through the canal, which their splendid efforts had fashioned, and a reporter from Chicago newspaper stood there and watched, not the passage of that vessel, but of George Goethals. He penned on that day, quote, "A man went down to Panama, where many a man had died, to shift the sliding mountain and stem the eternal tide. A man stood up in Panama, and the mountains stood aside." Next, as usual, I need to mention our affiliate, Onnit Labs, making great supplements and workout equipment, all top quality stuff, and I use several of their products. If you are interested, click on the link to Onnit on our website, wcypodcast.com, and when you do that, you help support the show because they send a small piece back to us to help pay the bills. Nothing is marked up. It's the same price as if you had gone straight to their website. And to top it off, we have a coupon code WCY, which takes 10% off your order. Check out our streaming apps available for Apple and Android platforms. These apps give you exclusive bonus features related to the show, not available otherwise. Another way is through Stitcher Smart Radio. Just register for free using the promo code WhenceCameU with no spaces, and they enter you in a chance to win $100, and they send us $1. Lastly, we do have a donation button ran through PayPal, and that's all secure. This is also on our website at www.wcypodcast.com. So there you have it, a bunch of ways you can help support this program. And next, I want to continue the segment spotlight on the Midnight Freemason contributors. This week, I wanted to tell you all about a big influence to me, and I'm pretty sure countless other Masons. A great writer indeed. I love this guy's articles. They're amazing. Steve Harrison, 32nd degree, KCCH. He's a past master of Liberty Lodge No. 31 in Liberty, Missouri. He is the editor of the Missouri Freemason magazine, author of the book Freemasonry Crosses the Mississippi, and a fellow of the Missouri Lodge of Research, and also its senior warden. He's a dual member of Kearney Lodge No. 311, St. Joseph, Missouri Valley of the Scottish Rite, Liberty York Rite, Moyla Shrine, and is a member of the DeMolay Legion of Honor. So most of his posts are historical in nature, and I've noticed that he has a private blog called The 1 Minute Mason, and they're focused, these short paragraphs, or less sometimes, interesting Masonic pieces. And occasionally, he will write an expounded version of something he put on there. Now, one thing I've been looking at quite a bit lately is trying to figure out a little bit more about a small piece involved in one of his posts. Now, if any of you know, I would love to hear more about it. Supposedly, there is a Masonic lodge on Old Ironsides. So, if any of you have any information regarding that, pass it along. I'd love to read it, enlighten myself, and share it with everybody else. Next, we're going to move on to this week's famous Freemason. Johann Eberhard Faber was born on December 6th, 1822 in the village of Stein near the city of Nuremberg, Germany. His father, George Leonard Faber, was a descendant of a famous Faber family, one of the ancient lineage in Bavaria engaged in the profession of manufacturing lead pencils. He did his primary schooling at Volksschule and then enrolled to study law at the University of Heidelberg, but he left his studies midway to pursue a career in commerce in America. He moved to the United States in 1848, and in 1849 opened a stationery store at North 133rd William Street, New York City. The store was later moved to Broadway in 1877. In 1852, he started to export red cedar logs to the Faber pencil factories in Stein, having realized that the red cedar available in America was ideal for lead pencils. In 1861, he opened the first lead pencil factory along the East River between 41st and 43rd Streets, New York City. He dropped his Christian name, and hence the factory was established under the name of Eberhard Faber. Where his building first stood at 41st and 43rd, now sits the United Nations building. The Faber brand is now Faber-Castell, which was eventually rolled into what is now the Papermate Company. Eberhard Faber died on March 2nd, 1879, in New York City. He was a member of Walworth Lodge No. 271 in New York City. Alright, that's it for this week. Please remember to find us on Facebook and follow on Twitter at Whence Came You. Don't forget about our podcast partners Juan Sepulveda of The Winding Stairs and Rob Lewis at the Far From Centered podcast. Be sure to follow those guys on Twitter and rate their shows in iTunes. Speaking of ratings, we have some great ratings, but please go ahead and, if you haven't done so, give us a rating as well. Check out Brother Harper's book, Freemasonry in Black and White. Check out the video I did for that and share it with your friends. And thank you guys so much for all of your support for this show. The likes, the follows on Facebook and Twitter. You guys are the reason I do this show. I love doing it, and I love all you guys for listening and sharing. This is all for you guys, brothers and fellows, and yes, even you fellows who are interested in joining but haven't yet. Take care, everybody. Stay on the level, and for Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.